Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. We are delighted to come to you each week with a program called Ancient Future Faith, where we talk about, well, what in the world is ancient future Christian faith, and how is it that this thing, and I believe it is rejuvenating and reviving and renewing worship across North America and beyond, as Christians are getting in touch with their ancient Christian roots. It's a good thing. We do try to bring you a wide variety of guests to talk about ancient future faith and other things. And she's back again for another command performance. She's my dear friend, Dr. Jennifer Harris. And Jennifer, the trio of podcasts we did, radio programs we did about mental and emotional health, my goodness, those things have been devoured online. It's really a testament to you and the wonderful way you present these things, and I just am so grateful for you coming back for some more.
Thanks, Chris. I really enjoy our conversation, so it's a privilege for me too.
Folks, if you haven't listened to those, you need to. Zip over to the Epiclesis website. That's epiclesis.org. And there is, again, a trio of programs that I did where Jennifer and I talked about, mental and emotional health, children of Israel, some parallels that we can see in their journey and our own. And Jennifer, we touched at least a couple of times on what will be today's topic, but we couldn't dig in because it surely requires at least one conversation, one full program, and that is the pernicious problem of narcissism.
Yes, it is a definitely troubling and disturbing trend that is just now starting to be studied, particularly in the church and in the pulpit. And there are certainly some questions that it raises for the future of the church and how we care for ourselves in healthy leadership.
I'll tell you a little story. Some years ago, I was wrestling with another colleague at a church with what we were convinced was a really, really bad case of narcissistic personality disorder. I didn't know anything about it, neither did my colleague, and so we immersed ourselves in the study of how narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder in particular manifest in the pulpit. Yeah. So I found a ministry that was then located in Canada. I don't think it's around anymore, that had a whole paper published on narcissism in the pulpit. And I did a little editorial cleanup on it and posted it without fanfare or advertisement on my current church's website. Yeah. And I think I told you, maybe I didn't. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, that is the top clicked item, most viewed item by far, almost 100,000 now folks who have looked at that. And I would get, I don't so much anymore, but I would get calls once or twice a month from people who didn't know me from Adam's house cat, as we say back home. And they were saying, oh, Pastor Chris, I think this is exactly what we're dealing with. What do we do? So on the one hand, I've been through it. You have too. We've come face to face with this thing. But on the other hand, we need to say that this is a term, narcissism, that gets tossed around a lot these days. And so I would be, at least from my part, quick to say, this is something that requires a professional to diagnose. The problem is the narcissist will rarely go to a professional because they don't think they need it. But you have to be real careful, don't you, about how you wield these terms.
Indeed. I think there's a change in our generational identities as well. And so starting with millennials and forward, a lot of them are labeled narcissistic by perhaps older generations just because of the differences in how they interact with the world. And that might be an unfair label to put on them, particularly in the face of what NPD or narcissistic personality disorder actually is. We all have narcissistic tendencies because we are sinful people and by nature are self-centered and selfish. The question is, how far on the spectrum are we in that respect?
Yeah.
So there are a couple of really important key red flags or green flags, if you will, that will help us define for ourselves and in others whether or not we need to be concerned about where we might be on that spectrum of narcissism.
I think that's a good place to start. Let's lay out, if you would, and I'll chime in the little that I know. You are much more well-versed and studied in this than I. Where are we when it comes to just sort of a base definition of narcissistic personality disorder?
Mm-hmm. For me, there are three key factors that make me question. The first is what's called grandiosity, or this very almost fantastical, grandiose opinion of themselves and also the work that they do or the way they exist in the world. The use of a lot of superlatives, the use of a lot of always, and I always, or I never, and then the accompanying fantasies that go to support that view of themselves as the best at this, or the world's never seen such as me. Another key piece of that is an inability to feel empathy for other people.
That's the big one.
That's a big one, because most of the time when we're looking at making changes within ourselves because of things that we need to work on, I don't know any of us who are not motivated by knowing that what we do hurts other people.
Yeah.
And that is a motivation for us to look at our stuff and do better, to, again, invite the Spirit of God into our lives to do the work, and we join with the Spirit in that. Having a lack of empathy, an inability to connect or care, frankly, for another person's feelings really, really makes that process a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And the final piece of that is this absolutely voracious need for admiration and attention and the spotlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. May I add another one or two? And you tell me if you see this as well. The one that really has caught me in a variety of places that I've said, ah, okay, maybe that's what we're dealing with here. The narcissist is one who cannot possibly imagine life before him or her. So this person will show up on the scene, and none of the history of the place particularly matters. The work that you have been doing before he or she arrived doesn't really matter. But now he's on the scene, and what happened before him is ancient history, doesn't matter. And now he's arrived, or she's arrived. Am I right about that one?
That's a really good way of saying it. Yes. And I think you and I can both wholeheartedly agree that we have experienced that in our years of church service.
Oh, mercy. Yeah. The other one I was going to mention is, at least in my experience, the person with narcissistic personality disorder does not seem to bear any authentic feelings themselves. They often look to others for a social cue. It almost sounds like borderline personality disorder as well. But this person looked to somebody else for cues about, oh, wait a minute, people are sad right now. I better be sad. And they have a difficulty in honest, transparent, authentic feelings. Am I right about that one as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's very interesting because for all of the grandiosity and arrogance and this very self-elevating way they bring themselves to a space or to a relationship, at the core of narcissism is an incredibly deep woundedness, an incredibly deep insecurity, and an incredibly deep lack of self-differentiation, meaning they do not know who they are.
Yeah.
And so you have this, I don't want to throw around another term, but it's almost bipolar way of existing where they're projecting such an opposite view of how they really are. That requires so much energy to perpetuate, to sustain. And then you talk about this inability to empathize or to connect emotionally with people. Yeah, they're watching other people for cues, just like you do when you are on a stage play and the director says, move stage left. They have to be told how they're supposed to feel because they don't know for themselves.
And which can also, in my experience, lead to contradictory statements. These folks are very often at war with themselves. On the one hand, they project this kind of self-adulation, self-love, but on the other hand, there may be internal self-loathing. So these folks will contradict themselves a lot. What you said a minute ago sparked something in my memory, and that is, and you alluded to it in another one of our podcasts, these people leave you completely drained.
There's someone in my life who I have often joked that I will go into a conversation knowing that the sky is blue and the grass is green and come out completely defeated in my stupidity because, of course, the sky is green and the grass is blue.
Yeah.
How could I have been so stupid? And that is kind of the crux of the problem, because interacting with a narcissist is impossible. But how do you interact with a narcissist when they are in your world? What do you do?
Yeah, or your boss, or let's say it's not in the employment or the professional world, but what happens if there is a narcissist or you suspect there's someone with narcissistic personality disorder in the pulpit? Let's talk about what we look for first and then maybe what we do. And while you're chewing on that a minute, and let me remind folks that they're listening to an interview with Dr. Jennifer Harris. She's a friend and fully immersed in lay counseling and woundedness and mental and emotional health. Today, we're talking about narcissism and what in the world do you do when you think you have a dose of that in the church? And right now, we're focused on the pulpit. Jennifer, what are we looking for?
It's a good question. A few things. First of all, is there a line of bodies left behind them?
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because some narcissists have been able to hold a position in the church for a long time and create a very seemingly robust and successful Christian culture. But if you look at the track record of staff turnover, of burnout, of how many times people come and go through the organization, that is a really important piece of information to look at.
I know exactly what you're talking about. A line of bodies. That's interesting because a lot of folks in the church might not think about that right off the bat.
Another piece that is extraordinarily important, not just in a narcissist in general, but at the core of a narcissistic pastor issue, is this idea of the complete inability to accept or receive criticism.
Yeah.
And when we look at what it is to be a leader, at least according to the scriptures, you know, at least to compare it to Christ, who, as you know, as Paul tells us, who was in the very form of God, but did not grasp after that, did not need it because he was so God that he could let it go and be completely emptied and take on the form of a slave. A narcissist cannot conceive of a place where they are ever wrong, ever. They can never be wrong. So if you want to test the waters, so to speak, a really good way to start is to bring them something very, very small that they may need to work on. Now, you don't just run up to someone that you have zero relationship with and has never seen your face before.
You have no
connection with. But if you are closer, you know, to the center of things in your church and you are wondering about your pastor, a really, really great litmus test is to say, you know, this insert very small, tiny, minute issue made me feel a little uncomfortable, and just see how they react. Because if it's small and minute, it should be easily addressed, easily reconciled, and easily repaired. But a narcissist will explode over the smallest infraction brought to their attention.
Yeah, because it goes back to the exaggerated descriptions of self that we were talking about, and lack of empathy, frankly, because they cannot imagine, the narcissist, that there would ever be a problem. And so they cannot be empathetic with you. I also note with narcissistic personality disorder, they can certainly sometimes be verbally abusive behind the scenes and or use charm and flattery. These are opposite ends of the same stick that I have seen from time to time. Are there some other things we should be looking for, Jennifer?
Yes. And just to finish up on what you were saying, I heard a joke once and I thought it was really funny, where there is a land called passive aggressiva and the narcissist is their king or queen. So they will use exactly what you said. They will use whatever stick or carrot they need in order to manipulate you into doing exactly what they wanted you to do. They just don't care which.
Yeah, which ties into another thing that I've noted, and that is the authoritarian. The narcissistic pastor is nearly obsessed with who it is in the organization who has the power. And they gravitate toward those folks, often are intimidated or suspicious of them behind the scenes, but they also see themselves, of course, as authoritarian. And I often tell people who are calling me in the midst of some sort of crisis in their own church, all right, let's talk about pastoral accountability, as you mentioned a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about authority. Where is the authority really? And is the leadership transparent, et cetera? So you've mentioned, and I've mentioned some things we ought to be on the lookout for, and I think I interrupted you. You were going to mention another one, but I also want us to talk about, gosh, what to do. What in the world do we do? Were there some others that you wanted to mention, some characteristics we ought to look for?
Well, I just wanted to comment briefly on the challenge that we have, particularly about narcissism in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
For many reasons, a narcissist is very attracted to pastoral leadership.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the pulpit provides a platform for the grandiose views that they want to share with the world about who they are and what they can do.
Unchecked,
yes. And the congregation, too often, particularly, I would say, in the American culture, because of our cultural need for security over many other qualities, we need to feel safe.
Mm.
We feel safe for a moment when a narcissist is in charge because their promises make us feel like everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of two sides of the same coin, meaning the pastor is attracted to this platform because of the authority and the place that it gives them to be the mouthpiece of God. And the congregation, unfortunately, often supports that and perpetuates that feeling because they offer to the pastor such respect and authority, often unearned and often undeserving.
Yeah, well, that's worth saying again, Jennifer. Just reiterate that, would you? That's so important.
Yes. The narcissist is attracted to the pulpit because of the authority and the platform that it gives him or her to project forward their fantasy about who they are and what they can do. The congregation, and just think about it just one moment in the context of what we're going through right now, the congregation's need and legitimate need to feel safe, to feel cared for, to feel protected and shepherded, often right into the placement of a narcissist in the pulpit because their promises, their grand plans make the congregation feel so secure.
Yeah, well said. I want us to use our remaining moments to talk about what in the world we do. But in the meantime, let me remind folks they're listening to an interview with Dr. Jennifer Harris. She's really immersed in this business of woundedness, mental health, emotional health, narcissism, conflict in the church, and how these things work themselves out in the church. I can imagine that we're going to need at least one other conversation when it comes to this business of narcissism, because frankly, narcissism also exists not only in the pulpit, but in the pew. And so we're going to want to talk about that as well. But let's end with maybe some hopeful or at least practical things for folks to consider when they're thinking, we might have somebody with narcissistic personality disorder in our pulpit. Mm-hmm. And what do we do?
Well, this may be coming at the idea of hope from a really backwards place, but the narcissist will always perform as a narcissist. Which means if we find ourselves in a position where we have to address a narcissist, whether in the pulpit or in our congregation, we can actually find some security in knowing that we can be confident in how they will respond to us.
Yeah.
We cannot logicalize our way out of it with them. We cannot say the magical right thing for them to understand. We cannot shed tears or shout in anger in any way that will touch any type of emotional response in them. And so there's actually, on this side of it, hope for us as we have to engage with such a person because we can rely on how they're going to respond. And so we can prepare and make a plan on how we are going to move forward, regardless of whatever they will say or do to try to maintain their position and their authority. Yeah. That's actually very helpful.
It reminds me of something that I was going to say, and that is, first of all, folks, this is not some territory that you go riding into, making accusations and throwing mud around. This is a very difficult situation. This can be very pernicious, and this is not a one-person crusade. This is something that has to be handled with great amount of prayer and integrity and care. But if I was going to boil down one thing, it would be the issue of accountability, because the narcissist pastor will not be accountable and will push against any kind of reasonable, even biblical, modes of accountability. So if you are concerned about that, and there seem to be some others who have a godly and appropriately focused concern about these issues, then you have to start working toward accountability and transparency. And then, as you said, a tree is going to bear leaves, a lion is going to roar, rivers flow, and narcissists do the same thing.
That's right.
They will not act like themselves, right? So it'll be fairly obvious, yes?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you are absolutely right, and I'm just going to take a moment to reiterate what you said. You do not ride into this issue with guns blazing and all the best intention in the world, but with no preparation and no team behind you. You will get chewed up and spit out and be left on the side of the road wondering how the heck you got here bleeding and wounded.
Yeah, yeah, no, you'll get chewed up. Frankly, it's often so big a problem that folks have very little recourse except to leave. If you're
That's
in a poisonous environment, a toxic environment, and it's not up to you to convince the rest of the church what the situation is, surely, hopefully, there are going to be some other folk who have the same kind of insights. Well, Jennifer, I want to recommend that people take a look at this document called Narcissism in the Pulpit. It's available at epiclesis.org, and I'll bet you have a couple of good resources as well. Do you want to recommend some things?
Sure. There is a book called Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y, that is an exploration of narcissism in the pulpit in Canadian churches, but very closely connected to how it functions in American churches.
Sure.
And then I just finished a book that is very recently published called When Narcissism Comes to Church by Chuck DeGroat that is just echoing my experiences, but also he's a therapist as well. So there are some really wonderful tools within that book offered from his years of experience in this area.
Sounds really good. Well, believe it or not, our time's already gone again, but let's do another one of these, shall we, to talk about the issue of narcissism, not in the pulpit, but in the pew, because that's one I think that's also confusing and confounding and leaves people wondering how in the world, as you said, did I end up on the side of the road bleeding? Jennifer Harris, thank you so much for joining me. You are a delight, and I'm so glad you took the time. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
So, folks, I want you to be thinking about this until we gather again for another episode of Ancient Future Faith. Surely the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi there, friends. This is Pastor Chris. One more word, please, before you go. Wanted to let you know that during this difficult time of the COVID-19 virus, we are not gathering at Epiclesis in body, but we are virtually in body because we share the same head, Jesus Christ. So if you're interested in hearing more about our virtual worship services or special small groups or prayer services, please check out epiclesis.org. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. Stay safe, and the Lord be with you.